but it's a concern for our community, our state, our nation. And the Department of Education does quite a things. For example, in adult education, they're the ones that fund some of the ESL classes, some of the post-secondary community colleges. It does a lot. So, you know, I'm not looking at my concern as a personal concern, John, but a concern for the students in our community, in our state, in our nation.
And what do you think people can do about this?
Well, the basic and the most logical thing that we can do is vote and get a hold of the House back again and the Senate and impeach this administration. That's definitely something that is workable.
Have you talked to other people who agree with you?
I have people who graduated with me at Roosevelt High School. I have friends that worked with me that all agree. We are in a situation that is very dangerous for our future, for our community, for our state and our nation. It's just not my opinion. It's not an opinion that what I'm voicing. It's a concern, a very real concern.
On that note, Irma Torres, retired teacher from Los Angeles Unified School District, I want to thank you very much for joining us on Politics or Pedagogy.
Thank you, John, for having me and hearing my concerns.
This is John Crumshoe with a special Politics or Pedagogy Education Report.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
Good afternoon and welcome to Middle East in Focus. I'm Esty Chandler. Palestinian and UN bodies marked Palestinian Children's Day yesterday with harrowing accounts of the toll the Israeli military assault on Gaza is taking on children. The United Nations says at least 100 children have been killed or injured every day in Gaza since Israeli strikes resumed on March 18th. As U.S. officials obfuscate reasoning for continued support of the Israeli-led genocide of Palestinians in Gaza. The resurgence of relentless and indiscriminate bombardments combined with a complete block on supplies entering the Gaza Strip for more than 3 weeks and the closure of all bakeries due to lack of flour has put the humanitarian response under severe strain and Gaza's civilians, especially its 1 million children, at grave risk. Will Israel starvation policy work? Will the world allow Israel to force 2 million Palestinians into famine? Will Trump aid the Israeli government in its quest to starve them to death? The resumption of aerial bombing campaigns on displaced civilians in Gaza is robbing Palestinian children of their childhoods and, in many cases, their siblings, parents, extended family members, homes, schools, and limbs. And save for Bernie Sanders and 14 senators, plus a handful of congressional reps, most Americans with the power to stop this genocide are willing to stay shamelessly silent or regurgitate deceitful, honest, and deadly lies presented as talking points by Israeli government officials and their American lobby arms. I'm very happy to be joined once again today by a great friend of this show, Hassan El-Tayyab, whose passion for foreign affairs is rooted in his desire to make life safer for people in the Middle East, including his extended family in Jordan, Palestine, and Yemen. Hassan El-Tayyab is an author, songwriter, and FCNL's legislative director for Middle East policy. Hassan leads the Friends Committee on National Legislation's work to end U.S. military involvement in the Saudi-led war in Yemen, advocate for Palestinian rights, and advance diplomacy with Iran. Hassan was honored by Arab America Foundation as an awardee of its 2022 40 Under 40 initiative for his policy work on Capitol Hill. Prior to joining FCNL, Hassan served as the co-director of the National Advocacy Group Just Foreign Policy, where he worked to reassert congressional war authority and promote human rights in the Middle East and Latin America. It is always a great pleasure to welcome Hassan Al-Tayyab back to Middle East in Focus.
Thanks for having me on, Esty. Really appreciate it.
And we really appreciate your voice and your work, Hassan. On Thursday, after once again filing a slate of joint resolutions of disapproval, or JRDs, to block the sale of two of the most egregious Trump administration offensive arms sales to Israel, Senator Bernie Sanders took to the Senate floor to bring two JRDs up for a vote by the full Senate. First, for those who don't follow the machinations of the arcane rules of Congress for sport as we might, can you briefly remind people what a JRD allows senators to do? And then can you also tell us about SJ Res 33, the heavy bombs it sought to prevent being sent to Prime Minister Netanyahu's military? And can you also talk about the Israeli military's use of these kinds of weapons in the last 18 months to accomplish the decimation of nearly all infrastructure in Gaza and killing well over 50,000 human beings?
Yeah, absolutely. Since taking office, the Trump administration has approved a series of arms sales to Israel totaling more than $12 billion. And joint resolutions of disapproval, or JRDs, as we say for short, led by Senator Sanders. There were also House versions of these same bills by Rep. Rashida and Rep. Pramila Jayapal, co-sponsored by over a dozen House members. And they were designed to block the sale of many of these offensive weapons that have been used in strikes that have killed thousands of civilians, including aid workers and journalists in Gaza. Some of the transfers included 2,000-pound bombs. Those were previously halted by President Biden over civilian harm concerns, and also D9 Caterpillar bulldozers. Sanders, what he did is he forced a vote on two of those resolutions. There were 11 introduced. One was SJ Res 26. That would cover joint direct attack munitions and other various bombs like 500-pound bombs and small diameter bombs. That total was $6.75 billion. And then SJ Res 33 are the 2,000-pound bombs. That was a total of $2.4 billion worth of offensive weaponry. And both of these sales implicate bombs that have been used in systemic patterns against civilians and civilian infrastructure, which has caused so much immense suffering and harm to civilians in Gaza over the past 18 months, but even a lot longer than that. Now, the JRD process, I don't want to go too deep in the weeds on this, but the Arms Export Control Act in 1974 was created, and Congress passed legislation requiring the president to provide notifications of major arms sales and created a process to actually block an arms sale by passing expedited procedures. And oftentimes, if you want to do a bill, it gets stuck in committee and you cannot force a vote. What this procedure does is allows you to cut in front of the line and actually force the whole chamber to vote unilaterally on that bill. It's only expedited in the Senate, which is why we haven't seen a House vote yet, but I think that's significant. And the Senate can move through this fast-track process, again, to get right to the floor. And I think it's really significant. This was the second time we've actually seen a vote to block a weapon sale in U.S. history, the last being actually in November that Senator Sanders led. We got 19 votes on that one. And then, unfortunately, we took a little bit of dip in support. We can get into why, but this vote got 15.
Let me guess that the why has something to do with cowardice and elections.
The those who, unless you want to respond to that.
You know, I think people are terrified of the AIPAC bazooka. You know, they are very worried. We saw Senator Ossoff and Warnock both drop off. We saw that Senator Ossoff, you know, I believe that his heart is actually in the right place, but there were significant threats of primary challenges, and, you know, certain groups in the district threatened to rally Brian Kemp to run against Ossoff. Senator Shaheen voted no, and that hurts the most to me. She's the ranking Democrat on foreign relations. I was thrilled in November when she voted to block that tank munition sale and the mortar shells. And, you know, she put out some really mealy-mouthed statements about how these there were, you know, tenuous negotiations going on that she did not want to disrupt. So she was claiming that she, you know, cared about the hostages, cared about, you know, ending the war, and that's why she voted to approve 2,000-pound bombs to be used by the Israeli government in Gaza, which is absolutely cynical and shameful.
And ridiculous, because those bombs are the most likely bombs to kill hostages. Those who spoke in opposition to the JRDs claimed that the weapons were needed so that Israel could, quote unquote, defend itself. But were any of the systems that were up under the JRDs defensive weapons? And can you also discuss some of the dozens of illegal airstrikes, including some on designated humanitarian sites, which resulted in thousands of civilian casualties using past shipments of the specific weapons these resolutions aimed to block?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. You know, you get a lot of people saying, you know, without these weapons, Israel can't defend itself from attacks from Hezbollah, Hamas, Iran. But these JRDs don't block defensive systems like Iron Dome and David Sling, which are specifically designed to intercept rockets and protect civilians from incoming attacks. Instead, the JRDs only impacted offensive weapons, again, the 2,000-pound bombs and joint direct attack munitions that have been linked to war crimes. Moreover, there's no military solution to the conflict in Gaza, only a diplomatic one that addresses root causes of violence. And I think that instead of sending more offensive weapons to Israel, Congress and the administration need to use leverage and use this military aid specifically as leverage with the Netanyahu government to get him to finally accept a permanent ceasefire deal and get back to diplomacy. Because as we all have seen, that Netanyahu tore up the ceasefire agreement and did so cynically. So really problematic what we're seeing right now. As far as your question around what we've been seeing, I mean, there's a long track record of Israel using U.S. weapons and military support to bomb civilians and civilian infrastructure. We've seen them just recently blow up an UNRWA school. They blew up Nasser Hospital. They've been, you know, using these weapons to commit mass atrocities. One, Amnesty reported January 9th, 2024, Israel, they hit a strike and it hit the top two floors of the Nofal family five-story building in Rafah using a small diameter bomb that would have been blocked in this latest sale. That one attack in 2024 killed 18 Palestinian civilians and wounded eight others. And the list really goes on and on and on. And a lot of people are mentioning 50,000 dead. But, you know, according to the Lancet study, if you include, you know, indirect attacks from lack of aid access you know, treatable diseases and fatalities from treatable diseases, that figure could be in the hundreds of thousands. So absolutely cynical. What we need to do is get back to diplomacy, reach a ceasefire in Gaza, and then hopefully de-escalate the entire region.
I'm looking forward to your version of the art of the deal because it sounds a lot more sane than the one that has been currently put out by Trump. You're listening to Middle East in Focus on listener-supported KPFK in Los Angeles. I am Esty Chandler, very happy to be joined today by Friends Committee on National Legislation's Legislative Director for Middle East Policy and a great friend of the show, pun intended, Hassan El-Tayyab. We're discussing Senator Sanders' JRDs to halt specific weapons transfers to Israel and UNICEF's alert that sounding the alarm that Israel's full blockade of Gaza has put, quote, the lives of nearly 1 million children at stake, end quote. Hassan, on Thursday, Sanders explained on his during his first speech that if Republicans are to vote against Trump, Elon Musk will spend unlimited dollars to defeat them in their next election. And on the Democrat side, the billionaires who fund AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, and their ilk will punish people who do so with millions of dollars in advertisements to beat them in their next election for opposing Netanyahu and his horrific war in Gaza. Sanders suggested that Democrats and Republicans who understand that they were actually elected to protect the interests of their constituents, not billionaire campaign contributors, would support a campaign to end Citizens United and the movement towards public funding of elections, so billionaires and deep pocket lobby machines would not be able to continue to control the political and legislative process. But one, there is really no evidence that shows that either party would support ending using publicly funded elections and overturning Citizens United. And two, neither Netanyahu or Trump hide behind curtains. They both are saying out loud and into microphones that their intention is to depopulate Gaza, ethnically cleanse Gaza. Shouldn't that be what we begin focusing our campaigns on?
Good point. You know, I've long talked about getting money out of politics. I don't know if you knew this. I was a teacher at Stege Elementary School for Bernie's first campaign. That's in Richmond, California, lowest performing school in one of the lowest performing districts in the state of California. And there was a cynical sign, a gigantic billboard over the school that, you know, it was like Chevron, you know, brighter future, something like that. And that same year, they spent millions of dollars trying to buy the local mayor seat. The kids that I was working with were getting asthma at higher rates than any other kids. And I just, you know, something clicked in my head and I ran to be a Bernie delegate that year and did a lot. You know, I actually got third place in the San Francisco election, and I did it because of money in politics. It really resonated with me. So I see all of the issues that Americans are facing right now, whether it be, you know, issues abroad, this military industrial complex, the pharmaceutical industries, polluting our, you know, healthcare system, you know, really we could go on and on and talk about all the interconnections, but that's a major issue and something I hope really picks up steam. I think there's an anti-corruption campaign just waiting to be born, and we're seeing Sanders have a lot of success in a lot of the rallies, the Stop Oligarchy rallies that they've been doing. And so, absolutely, if we want to clean up our foreign policy and really try to cut the cord with regards to the United States' support for just these horrific policies going on in Gaza and the West Bank and really across the Middle East, money out of politics needs to be at the center of that campaign. And as far as centering a campaign around that, I'm all for it. Sign me up. Okay. As far as stopping the ethnic cleansing of Gaza, I completely agree with that. A major concern. This is clearly the plan of the Netanyahu government, Donald Trump. I actually spent 3 weeks in February in the West Bank while Donald Trump was making these horrific ethnic cleansing comments. I was in East Jerusalem, and it felt very real. It did not feel like a joke. It didn't feel like it could just be easily dismissed, especially if you're living in the region and hearing the most powerful leader, so to speak, and potentially in the world, saying that he's looking to ethnically cleanse the entire Gaza Strip of its 2 million residents. Very real stuff. Now, for me, the biggest leverage that we have is the weapon sales that we provide. And that's why I think it's so important for us to get behind these JRDs, making sure that if your member voted the right way, that we thank them and get them the support they need. And if they voted the wrong way, that they should be hearing from us. Because unless we cut off that flow of offensive weaponry, I think it's going to be difficult to have the leverage we need to stop some of the worst policies that we're seeing unfold by the Netanyahu government.
Well said. You and I both worked on publicly funded elections. For me, it was up until the time I was bitten by the fierce urgency of chutzpah. So no aid has been allowed into the Gaza Strip since March 2nd, representing the longest period of aid blockage since the start of Israel's current war. No food, no water, no shelter, no medical care. All these things have become increasingly scarce. And without essential supplies, malnutrition, diseases, and other preventable conditions, as you mentioned, will likely surge, leading to an increase in preventable childhood deaths, et cetera, et cetera. As we heard on this show 2 weeks ago from Dr. Khalife, and you just mentioned, those deaths are not included in the numbers being reported. What can people do to press the compliant media to report the truth about the weapons transfers leading to these outcomes, and our government supporting the Israeli genocide in Gaza and the rising death toll resulting from the Israeli government's defiance of international law?
Great question. I mean, one, by supporting programs like Middle East in Focus and KPFK, who are trying to get out the truth about what's happening and providing a platform for folks like myself and others to really, speak the truth that we're documenting and seeing every single day. So number one, independent media is so critical. And then trying to make sure that after we're educated, that we try to educate others and make sure that our friends, family, our community, our faith networks, where we volunteer, that they're also getting the right information. Now, I will say, to quote the late, great Bob Marley, you can fool some people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. The American people are getting wise to what's going on in Israel, Palestine, and Gaza, in part because of the social media streams that cannot be suppressed, in part because it's just getting so awful, it's hard to keep a lid on that story. And I think that's really productive and positive. And we're now seeing a majority of Americans do want to end our complicity in gross violations of human rights in Gaza. What we need to do also is try to make sure that translates with our members of Congress and our politicians. So that needs to be scaled up, and they need to be hearing from us early, often, and hopefully they get the message. So I did want to add that as well. So on top of this work, trying to hold the media accountable, we got a lot of work to do with our lawmakers as well.
That's right. Humanitarian organizations continue working tirelessly to protect and support children and families under these absolutely horrific conditions in Gaza, as they themselves continue to face attacks that have killed and injured hundreds of AIDS workers. 362 Palestinian medical workers have been abducted and imprisoned. Aid workers, journalists, schools, and hospitals have all been targeted. As you mentioned, these kinds of attacks are not unusual. And are they not in direct violation of international humanitarian law, as they jeopardize the continuity of critical life-saving operations for people in desperate need? And also, as allies have not only failed to impose repercussions on Israeli officials, they've instead continued to be compliant in Israeli war crimes. Hassan, have the Israeli and U.S. governments effectively destroyed international law?
You know, there's been a long campaign to undermine the rules-based order. And it's not just, dictators like Putin. It's the United States' own policies to turn a blind eye to regimes that it supports, like the Israeli government, like the Saudi government, like the United Arab Emirates, and really the list goes on and on. And when you're not enforcing international humanitarian law, or I should add, our own U.S. law, which is the Foreign Assistance Act, the Leahy Law, 620I, the Foreign Assistance Act, the Arms Export Control Act, you're really undermining key rules of the road that we need to be safe in the world. Now, there's a lot of reasons for that. Unfortunately, it's more pronounced on the Republican side, but even a lot of Democrats have turned a blind eye to enforcing international law. They'll mention it when, you know, they're upset with Russia or China or adversaries of the United States like Iran, but they will again turn a blind eye to it when it comes to quote unquote U.S. allies like the Israeli government and others. So really problematic and something that we need to correct, because without these global institutions, I think we're all vulnerable.
You know, the time goes so fast when we're together. We'll have to have you back on again soon to educate us further. I can't thank you again enough for your continued work and your willingness to take time out of your weekends to come and inform us all on what's going on.
Thank you so much again for having me. Really appreciate Middle East in Focus, KPFK. Love the work you do and grateful to be invited.
Thanks again. We now have students who are in this country legally being picked up by masked, mostly men, handcuffed and whisked across state lines into conservative court jurisdictions, having their legal status revoked with no charges against them because their names were supplied to the Trump State Department by Israel lobby organizations. Mahmoud Khalil was arrested by plainclothes federal agents on March 8th and is still being held in a Louisiana ICE facility to this day. He's also featured in the documentary film The Encampments, now playing across the country, a film that debunks the many lies being told by officials and the compliant mainstream media about the encampments at a time when the film's director, Kai Pritzker, says, quote, the lies about the encampments are actually being used to justify the deportation campaign against students, end quote. KPFK needs your love. KPFK is Southern California's original progressive radio station. We've been producing content that has challenged the status quo since 1959. Whether you're a new, longtime, or returning listener, your support is needed more than ever. For just $5 a month, you can help us reach 500 friends before April 15th. Join us in making a difference by calling 818-985-5735. Press option 2. If we meet this goal, we can shorten our spring fund drive and continue to bringing you guests like Hassan Al-Tayyab, the kind of voice you depend on us to hear from. Your support means the world to us. Once again, I want to thank our guest Friends Committee on National Legislations, Legislative Director for Middle East Policy, Hassan Al-Tayyab. Our theme song is The Overture from Summer Night's Dream by Marcel Khalife. For KPFK Los Angeles, I'm Esty Chandler, thanking you for continuing to support KPFK and for taking this time to put the Middle East in focus.